Welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 19th of April with me, Ian Welsh. The Innovation Forum team is in Amsterdam next week on the 23rd and 24th of April for this year's Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference. We're pleased to be working with Cass Scale, formerly the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, as our knowledge partner for the event. And a few days ago, I spoke with Cass Scale's Callie Rossage about some of the incoming regulation that's going to impact the sector, a topic that's likely to be hot in Amsterdam. That's coming up. First, though, is some sustainable business news. The decision of the Science Based Targets Initiative to allow companies to use carbon credits to offset Scope 3 supply chain emissions has proved controversial, to say the least. Existing rules for companies to align with the SBTi's net zero standard allow for only up to 10% of emissions to be offset by carbon credits. It appears that this decision came as a surprise to many of the organisation's staff, with a number of them calling for SBTi CEO Luis Fernando do Amaral and members of the board to resign. The ultimate fear is, of course, that companies will see a green light for using credits to offset emissions while not making efforts to make actual cuts. When releasing details of the new plans, SBTi commented that there was ongoing healthy debate about carbon credits and that when properly supported by policies, standards and procedures based on scientific evidence, the use of carbon credits could be an additional tool to tackle climate change. Thus, the organisation had decided to extend their use. A group of SBTi staff and advisors said that the decision was not based on science and accused the initiative of becoming a platform for greenwashing, with potential for conflicts of interest and undue influence by lobbyists. However, fans of using carbon credits were more welcoming of the move, pointing out that such investments in projects preventing deforestation, for example, are at present among the best methods of getting much-needed funding to Indigenous people for economic development that preserves forests. The International Emissions Trading Association said that the revised Scope 3 rules would offer a practical route for corporates to engage in climate action. However, following the SBTi's announcement, WWF, one of the founders of the initiative, criticised its approach, stating offsets cannot be a substitute for reducing emissions from company operations, products and value chains. WWF says that carbon offsetting needs to be limited in its application to address a small percentage of residual emissions and calls for rigorous science to underpin all of SBTi's efforts. Cotton certified by Better Cotton and supplied to brands has been linked by NGO Earthwatch with degraded land in Brazil's Cerrado biome. Earthwatch researchers have traced shipments between two cotton producers linked to land grabbing and illegal land use change in the Cerrado and manufacturers in Bangladesh and Indonesia supplying the international brands. Earthwatch says that cotton in these supply chains is certified by the Better Cotton Initiative, which strictly forbids land grabbing and clearance. Better Cotton describes the allegations as highly concerning and restated that any farms that do not comply with the requirements of the Better Cotton standard will have licences revoked and commissioned an independent audit of the farms in question. The certifier states that it prioritises enhancing due diligence regarding land conversion, deforestation and local community impact, and that consumers and the brands that supply them must have confidence that the cotton in their clothing is produced responsibly. The rise and rise of renewable power continues. The global wind power sector increased capacity by 117 gigawatts in 2023, 50% faster than in 2022, according to the Global Wind Energy Council's Global Wind Report 2024. Thanks to the 170 gigawatts of new wind power installations, global cumulative wind power capacity passed the 1 terawatt milestone in 2023, showing year-on-year total growth of 13%. However, to meet 2023's COP28 goal of tripling renewable power by 2030, global wind growth needs to rapidly accelerate, with annual wind installations roughly tripling to at least 320 gigawatts every year over the course of the next decade, Global Wind Energy Council says. I was pleased to talk recently with Callie Rossage, Editorial Director at Cass Scale, about some of the upcoming regulatory challenges for the apparel sector. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the impacts around regulation and other impacts in the apparel sector. Kayleigh, it strikes me that as for many sectors, apparel is now really being impacted by incoming regulation. What for you are the most significant of these and what do these impacts look like?
Regulation has and will continue to be a must watch for companies, regardless of their sector. Our team did a wonderful job summarizing significant legislation, particularly in the EU as it relates to apparel and textiles, in a recent webinar. This is something our members are asking for. We've been diligently navigating this landscape as well as it evolves and trying to decipher the best ways to deliver this information to our members. And that looks like reports, it looks like a webinar series. So there's much happening behind the scenes with our policy team. So back to the policy. So what's important? Those that are in force include the EU's Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, the CSRD. And this just establishes a standardized framework for reporting on ESG. And of course, France has also been a front runner in this space, including their anti-waste for a circular economy law requiring verified environmental labeling. Our team is continually mapping how these pieces of regulation align with our tools like the Higindex and what it means, including incoming regulation like the Substantiating Green Claims Directive and, of course, the Eco-Design for Sustainable Products Regulation and how it relates to our space. So those are the key pieces that we're watching.
How is the sector responding more generally?
I'd say that companies that have been taking it seriously have long made the investments into their supply chains, and that includes staffing as well. Some even going so far as to intertwine their financial incentives to ESG progress, which is a major incentive to act on those promises. Resources may be nimbler across the size of a company, but by and large, I think the sector is really bracing for impact and bracing for regulation. I'd also argue more broadly, what's changed is the material risks are more fully understood, not just from public and private, but financial sectors. So we're seeing that general alignment happening. And it used to be clever to dismiss the conversation and say, oh, well, everyone has a different definition for sustainability. Not so much the case anymore. And in fact, we really benefit from a harmonized language and clarity on these topics, be it water loss, energy use, labor rights. The materiality and importance is more fully understood and taken into account.
It used to be that the leading players always talked about going beyond compliance, you know, because compliance was quite a low bar and it was always about compliance and pushing things forward. Are you seeing a switch to it's compliance and that's it at the moment, just because just as the sector perhaps finds its feet?
I love that you said that, because that's also what we're championing. And what I see too is the opportunity here really is to go beyond compliance. And my colleague Joel, who heads the HIG product tools, really said it best. We don't want to just have the bare minimum compliance. The tools should go beyond regulation. We shouldn't just have the bare minimum compliance in a calculator of sorts. It's not ambitious enough. I would completely echo that and say that that is the opportunity, right, to go beyond it and to really live out these visions of a sustainable and just industry.
But I guess the getting beyond compliance now is more challenging because the rules are getting stricter.
I don't think anyone, you know, wakes up in the morning is like, ah, compliance, easiest thing to do today, right? I mean, it's difficult. It's very humbling to get behind the scenes and get behind the work and see that across the entire value chain, how do you get something in agreement? How do you get policy that supports these efforts? It's not easy. I'm right there with you as following along and seeing how this happens.
I bet more people get excited about compliance than you might think. How should companies in the apparel sector identify the potential opportunities here? As ever, there are always opportunities.
Identifying the opportunities. The first thing that comes to mind is really that old saying that you have to measure it first. At least speaking from our approach and our membership, is that going beyond compliance, going beyond that scope, it involves scope 1, 2, 3. It involves all tiers. It's an extensive mapping of one supply chain and knowing where the impact lies. So that understanding, first and foremost, will set companies up to be beyond compliance. I think that's where I'd almost steer the conversation of like, back to the basics, here's where you need to begin. When you have that, and when you have that grasp of your supply chain, then I think you'll know exactly how to tailor the asks and deliver on that for the governing bodies.
So apparel's been a sector where, to a greater or lesser extent, there have been some really exciting companies leading the way, been quite a long tail. Are you seeing that kind of long tail catching up?
It's hard to not bifurcate the lens, because I think we have a sense, at least in apparel, at least in my experience in the industry, to really look at the big players, really look at the small players. The majority and the bulk, a lot of things happening with small to medium sized enterprises. The approach here is to get the middle guys too. And I think not have that strained lens. At least that's what I've seen in my experience prior, also reporting as well. I'd also draw attention to the greater economic indicators. Even in my conversations recently at different sustainability events, it's like, wow, things seem really expensive now. And that's where you say, okay, do we forfeit these efforts? No, not at all. We need to continue to ramp up these investments and not lose track and not have that siloed lens. Give credit where it's due, but there's still a lot of progress to happen.
Any other major industry trends you're seeing right now?
Policy is huge. I think the material space, at least with the host of conferences on the circuit this spring, including Innovation Forums events in Amsterdam and New York events, as well as Sustainable Fashion Forum, our Cascale events. There's so much happening, and this is what everyone's talking about. From a personal interest, I'm a big time thrifter. I continue to champion the mainstreaming of resale and rental and circular practices. As an organization, I too feel the resonance between our impact pillars of combat climate change, foster decent work for all, and create a nature positive future. All of this personally resonates, and I feel it lives much longer than a trend can withstand, but that's what I'm seeing, and I'm sure we'll dip in some more areas that you want to talk about.
One that occurred to me really is the regenerative agriculture, a massive big theme across many sectors. How is the apparel sector transitioning to a more regenerative approach?
I'll lean on my recent conversations in the field here, no pun intended. Brands are making regenerative part of their DNA, be it luxury players such as Louis Vuitton or contemporary denim makers such as Citizens of Humanity. It all sounds and looks and quite frankly feels very good from a consumer perspective, but it also gives that added benefit of the carbon drawdown. The thing is, as everything is lately, it can be long, arduous and expensive process. It takes a minimum of 3 years to convert a farm over to regenerative agriculture. And so brands are needing to smarten up as to how to capture those incentives. I've been really loving seeing how everyone's been embracing it, regardless of where they sit in the industry.
Part of the regen ag thinking, are you seeing any evidence of a move into natural fibers and away from man-made?
The facts are that the market share continues to be dominated by synthetic fibers. I mean, polyester makes up 54% of production. And if business as usual continues, then the global fiber production is estimated to grow to 147 million tons by 2030. And this is per Textile Exchange, who is also a collaborator with us in initiatives like the Policy Hub. Does that mean the share of natural fibers is shrinking? No, it's also growing. Cotton and wool, for one, both increased their market share, though it's a much smaller percentage of overall production. So it's happening, but the whole lot is growing. We're seeing fiber use increasing across the board at the same time that next gen material players are entering a so-called fiber fray. I think it goes back to that scale of growth, not to make it about like systems change, but it always ends up here somehow. Like with any shift in fashion, there needs to be longstanding commitment, signed efforts, and frankly, money down to see the sizable shifts needed. But, you know, I'm hopeful. You mentioned earlier some of the doom and gloom that can happen, but I'm hopeful given not only our membership spanning the entire consumer goods value chain, but there really is creative and collaborative efforts to get fashion towards that promised vision. I'm eager to see what transpires.
Has the concerns around microplastic pollution, which of course can come from the laundry of synthetic fibers, has that had any leverage with the sector?
It has. It's evolving. And I was thinking about this too earlier. Why haven't we seen something as grandiose as a ban? We've seen bans on plastic bags, right? We've seen bans on the cutlery. But why haven't we seen a ban on that in fashion? And what would happen? What would it take? The conversations are evolving, whereas regulators are asking that. They're drilling it into their draft bills, you know, that full life cycle analysis. At least with today's front-running activists in Gen Z, they're so curious. They want to learn more. They want to learn more about everything in their wardrobe, in their fridges. That curiosity will continue to harbor more questions. And even in my reporting days, I'd be writing and I think I'd get to the solution, but then I turn the corner and something else was wrong. There's always going to be externalities. I don't think anyone knew at the time it was certain things were an answer to faster production, more efficiency. I always try to lead with curiosity in my perspective.
Let's think to future trends. And what are you looking at Cascale? What do you think is going to be the next challenges, but also the next opportunities?
I think the health of any industry can be gauged by its career hopefuls. So take media or fashion broadly, for example. Media consistently reports downward trends for its newsrooms, which is not great. Fashion, meanwhile, can vary, but I'd be really keen and invite others to look at how can newcomer sustainability and DEI professionals fare? How can they have a lengthy career and how can this be sustained? Because that's also sustainability. You know, it's always motivating to me when students are interested in the work that I'm doing or that my company's doing and my career path more broadly. I think seen another way is like, do your values mirror your organization's? Or is it the other way around? So really that introspective invitation. Cascale has been in it for 15 years. So I do think that this longevity does speak to the progression and the wisdom set us up for a place to be anticipatory of these future trends and also be acting in that manner. that's what I like to look at. I think it's very important. Mentorship matters a lot to me to bring me more people into this space. That's what I really wanted to talk about. But what about you? I feel like I'm usually on the other side of the question asking, but I want to ask you the same question. What future trends are you looking at in particular?
For me, the move out of synthetics, we do quite a lot of work in plastic pollution, and I think it's a really big issue around dealing with some of the significant pollution issues that we have globally. But that then does buck the model of the fast fashion, getting things for low cost model. And I don't think we've really found a way out of that yet. But I'm always buoyed by the fact that the apparel sector is one that's always very creative. It's full of creative people. When we hold our events, I've always come away very enthused by the passion for ideas and for change and for optimism. There are so many solutions being presented at the events that you mentioned, including our Innovation Forums events. There's so many exciting solutions, but every year we come back to the fact that they haven't really scaled and they're still just pilots. I'm always looking to see how things can scale, and that's what I'm hoping to see when we're in Amsterdam and New York in the next few months.
Absolutely, watching the same thing and really appreciated this conversation. And so, thank you for having me, Ian. And as you mentioned, yes, please tune into the webinars, sign up for the newsletters, attend the events, and keep on listening.
Absolutely. Innovation Forum and to Cascale. Kayleigh Rosich from Cascale, thanks very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Several of the Cascale team will be joining us in Amsterdam next week for the Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference. There are still a very few tickets remaining. Full details of how to join us are available on the Innovation Forum website, which is also, as ever, the place to go for all the latest analysis and interviews. But that's it for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and until next time, goodbye.